Hey there everyone, this is Cass. I want to bring you a content warning for this episode before we get started. This episode we are talking about Final Fantasy House and Jennifer Cornette. So with that comes discussion, either passing or in-depth, of the following topics: cults, other kin, fiction kin, soul bonding, gender denial, forced gender expression, physical abuse, sexual abuse, generalized abuse, gaslighting, threats of suicide, self-harm, manipulation, ritual worship, physical confinement, mock vomiting noises, holding of a person against their will, sleep deprivation, grooming, invasion of privacy, ableism, and fatphobia. All of these on their own are pretty heavy, but altogether that can culminate in a lot. If this episode isn't for you, that is totally fine. Please take care of yourself, and we do have a note from Tease before the episode gets started.
So in our HIV Living Hamilton episode, we briefly talked about Mozart being black. However, this was an error. We were actually thinking about Beethoven, but apparently, once I looked it up, the theory has been going on since the early 1900s, but it's never been truly proven. I mean, obviously, we can't just go off of what random people at the time who wrote stuff in their diary said about Beethoven, because what people look like and descriptors that we use at the time Beethoven was alive, which honestly I don't even know what time period it was, versus now, are two very different things. So I wanted to clear that up, that that was an error on our part. Right now, going around once in a while, there is a piece of art where people claim it's what Mozart really looked like and that he was black, but in reality this was Chevalier de St. George is Mozart, but in reality he was another composer and his work was made at the same time as Mozart, but he clearly is not as famous as Mozart, whether it's just due to lack of exposure or racism or whatever. But sorry about that one, guys, and we hope you enjoyed this episode.
Hello there.
Hi, how are you, Cass?
Tease, you can't just ask how I'm doing. We have to invite the people in.
Hey, welcome,
guys. Welcome to Author's Note.
Don't listen.
Tease, you've made an absolute mockery of this podcast.
I really have. I'm sorry, guys. We hit 100 followers and I just don't know how to fucking act. I apologize.
The ego, it's so inflated. Thank you so much for that. That's incredible. It is both a very little number, but also a very big number. Because, like, 100 people in a room is a lot. 100 people in a room is
it fandom, anxiety-inducing. I can never say anything bad about you again. You did this
exactly
for us.
Say thank you, Mr. Pee Pee Wise.
Thank you, Pee Pee Wise.
Thank you, Pee Pee Wise.
Cass, have you been watching anything?
I've been watching so much stuff. So
tell
I decided
me.
I was going to... I'm stuck in a swamp where seasons are eternal and never ending. Mm-hmm. It is the opposite of Hades Town in that it is summer all the time, and I hate it here. But I've been watching a lot of like spooky autumnal stuff. Ooh. So I finally watched Over the Garden Wall.
What did you
for the first
think?
Time. I fucking loved it.
I love Over the Garden Wall. I love it so much. I watch it once a year. I've actually done academic work on Over the Garden Wall, and it's just something that's really near and dear to my heart, and I love it, and I'm so glad you enjoyed it. It's so
it's
good.
Beautiful.
It's filled with so many good one-liners, literally
it
all the
really
time.
It really is.
I'm just like, drum me, like, without thinking, like,
that's a rock fact.
I have friends who actually have matching rock fact tattoos, like, I love Over the Garden Wall very much. It's so good. I love you, Jason.
Can't believe
Thunderbird.
Greg died because he stole a rock.
Literally, you have such beautiful eyes. Anything else?
Do you think Greg is dead?
No.
Yeah.
Spoilers for a show that came out in 2005 years ago.
Yeah,
guys.
I don't feel bad. I knew going into it that it was about purgatory and like Virgil's trip through hell.
Yeah.
So I knew that much because of just discussions and examinations that had happened on Tumblr at the time and still kind of go on Twitter, but it was really good. I really liked, was it Pottsville? Pottstown?
Pottsfield? Pottsfield.
Pottsfield. That was really good.
Yeah.
I also watched John Carpenter's The Thing. That was wonderful.
Movie. What a fantastic movie.
Incredible VFX. Love that dog. He was just doing Dead by Daylight. I've never played it, but I want them to add the puppy.
That'd be add very the puppy. Good.
No one's going to kill you if you're the puppy. Somebody will. And I mean, eventually you'll have to turn into the thing, but
that would be really good though. Ooh.
Just a dog walking around, false sense of safety.
Yeah. Mm.
What else did I watch? I watched Jennifer's Body.
Ooh, what did you think?
I loved it.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I loved that Chris Pratt got killed in
the perfect amount of time for Chris Pratt to be in a movie.
Oh my God.
Preferably after zero.
Mm-hmm.
He says one line and then he's gone. It's mm-hmm. so good. I love it. Anything else?
No, I think that's it.
Damn. That's a lot of stuff, though.
Yeah. It's been less than a week since we recorded it, so.
Oh, boy. It really has. What did I watch?
What have you been watching, Teeth?
I watched Scream 2 for the first time in my life.
I saw on Twitter you found it disappointing.
Not as much as a banger as I thought it would be. Mm. However, Dewey writes, because, like, Dewey was my favorite, so to have that emotional rise and fall, I was like, damn.
Dewey, like Malcolm in the Middle, Dewey?
Dewey, like the character in Scream
franchise. I've never seen a Scream movie.
Just watch the first one. Matthew Lillard's gay in it. It's good.
I was frightened as a child.
Oh, me too. I was so scared. Ghostface. I was very scared of Ghostface as a child. I watched the first Scream, like, last year, maybe, and then
it was like
Scream Pooed on very TV.
Popular. So my school, my elementary school, did like Halloween parades.
Yes, me where too.
In, yeah, all the kids would dress up in costume for the day, and then like you'd walk the perimeter of the school, and like you'd get to see everybody else's costume. Mm-hmm. And it was always like the fifth and sixth graders at the time who would wear Ghostface costumes that had like a vacuum form plastic over it. Yeah, with the blood pump. So, like, the blood would spill. Oh, I hated it.
Oh, I was so afraid of it. Because, like, oh, my God. I don't even know what year Scream came out. Late 90s. But my cousin is 8 years older than me. And he was Ghostface 1 year for Halloween. And he had a shirt that said, "What's up?" on it. And I was scared. I remember being, like, genuinely afraid of Ghostface. But now I am in my 20s.
Now Ghostface feels kind of comedic.
Yeah, now Ghostface is my friend and he calls me on the phone and we talk about found footage movies together. Yeah. It's nice. But
3 a.m. challenge. I just have a polite conversation with my good pal Ghostface.
I love that for you. Yeah. I hope you enjoy that conversation. But besides Scream 2, more importantly, I started to ruin my life. And I started listening to No Dogs in Space, which is a music genre history podcast. So mm-hmm. Tease is learning all these fun new musical acts that apparently everybody else knew about, but I didn't know about. Like, all right, guys, not to out myself, but I did not know that the Misfits were like horror punk music literally until 2 days ago.
What is horror punk? I mean, okay. It's
punk, right? But with, like, kind of a more goofy horror element combined in it. So it's like, I killed a baby, like, stuff. And
do you remember dead baby jokes?
Yeah, and I'd rather not repeat them because I've always hated
them. Of course, yeah. That was just a part of our history where everyone thought that was, like, the funniest punchline in the world.
And I hated every single one of them. But, so I've been listening to a lot of new music, which is, I guess, old to everybody else, but new to me. And I listened to Nine Inch Nails for the first time this week.
Oh, my God.
And that was truly an experience between me and God, because there I was, minding my own business, flossing my teeth at my desk at work. And then the water guy walked in on me blasting Closer very, very loudly off my phone. And I was like, this is a moment between me and God, not me and you, sir. But luckily, we didn't make eye contact, so it was fine. And, actually, something that's way more important than No Dogs in Space. I watched Uncle Boonmi, who can recall his past lives for the first time this past week. And for most people, you'd be like, what the fuck is that? But for other awful people who watch movies, it was a Cannes winner in 2013, and it is a Thai film, and it was such an experience. And I also watched The Wolf House, which is a Chilean stop-motion horror movie, which was also really cool. A lot of it went over my head until I read what really was the point of it, but it really was... Both of them.
No shame in that. No shame in walking out of a movie and going, I didn't get that. And reading the synopsis and being like, I kind of get it now.
Yeah, so actually with both movies, I had that reaction with Uncle Boonmi. I was like, maybe I'm just too American for this. But the more I thought about it and digested it, the more I kind of pieced together my own belief.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I watched Wolf House, I was like, okay, I think it's about this. And then by the end of it, I was like, okay, no, it's about this. And then when I went to go read other people's like Letterboxd reviews, because I love Letterboxd a lot, I looked at the top review and surprise, this was based off of a German cult that resided in Chile. So I was like, whoopsies. But it was really cool, and if you're into stop motion and you are into like colonization and cult imagery, I highly recommend Wolf House. It's only like an hour and 10 minutes, and Uncle Boonmi is 2 hours, but my God, it is such an experience to watch. I really enjoyed both of them a lot. But now we are about to get...
Speaking of cults,
we are going to talk about a topic that's near and dear to my heart, and it's something that a lot of people already know about because of Frederick Knudsen down the road.
I had never heard of this. I had never heard of this before we talked about... We were talking about something, and it was in one of our earlier episodes of the podcast, and we were coming up with topic ideas, and T said, we should do one on Final Fantasy House. And I went, what? And T said, watch this.
and
I have not known peace since.
Here we are. And I dug through all of the original compilation accounts. I've dug through where this cult leader essentially has ended up in more recent years, like 2016. Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to read about her time during in the Suikoden fandom, which is usually known as the Sarah Saga. However, I probably can flub it enough. So to start off, maybe we should start with a little summary about Final Fantasy VII. Cass, you want to start that off?
Yeah, Final Fantasy VII is an incredibly long game. It took me a long time to try to boil down into one paragraph the important parts of this game so that you can understand the characters at play here. And in the end, I told Tease, what if I just read this very clipped synopsis, which is a page and a half long. So if you are familiar with Final Fantasy VII, you don't need to listen to this. But for anyone like me who has never played Final Fantasy VII, I know, I'm not a real gamer.
I have
get
never
it.
Played
I
it
want
either.
To. I just don't have the time right now. But I'm going to read to you the shortest synopsis of the story beats in Final Fantasy VII.
An old flame, Tifa, has asked Cloud to join Avalanche, a group trying to stop megacorporation Shinra from draining the planet's lifeblood to extinction. After two missions, he stumbles upon and then protects Aeris, often referred to as Aerith in the fandom, a flower girl in trouble with some gangsters. He becomes involved in a much bigger plot when President Shinra kills thousands of Midgar citizens just to wipe out Avalanche. These events culminate in Aeris being captured after all, and Avalanche along with her. They find themselves freed the next morning by an unknown hand. They follow a trail of blood to find that a mysterious man, linked to Cloud's shaky memories of the past, has killed President Shinra and made off with the disembodied head of Genova, a foreboding humanoid monster. Cloud recounts how the mysterious man Sephiroth, once his hero and idol, betrayed him and massacred his hometown. He regrets being unable to stop him and being so weak against him. The group trails Sephiroth to the Temple of the Ancients, a race known as the Cetra, of which Aeris is a member, where he reveals his plan to wound the planet with an incredibly destructive spell called Meteor, using a black materia stone. The group fights off Sephiroth and obtains the stone, but Cloud's dissonance about his own identity allows Sephiroth to manipulate him into giving it back. Eris rushes off to stop Sephiroth herself, praying to the planet for aid. The group follows her, but Sephiroth kills her, devastating Cloud, who believes himself to have known and loved her long ago. The group follows Sephiroth to the northern crater, where Genova collided with the planet in ancient history. It is revealed that the man that they are pursuing is not the original Sephiroth, but a shape-shifting clone of Genova, as are many others gathering together to be killed and absorbed into one being. Cloud finds out he is also a clone and can't reconcile his existence or his past. He is once again controlled by Genova / Sephiroth, enabling the latter to summon Meteor. The planet responds by summoning gigantic creatures that serve as its immune system, called weapons. Sephiroth makes the weapons think the source of the destruction is not him, and they disperse in search of it. The forces at work crack the ground open and swallow Cloud. The group is arrested by Shinra. Cloud's friends escape Shinra and try to protect the people from the weapons, who have turned on them in an effort to try to return energy to the planet in preparation against Meteor's arrival. The group later finds Cloud in a small town on the opposite end of the planet, rendered catatonic by his psychological breakdown and being overwhelmed by the planet's life stream. During a battle with one of the weapons, Cloud falls into the bowels of the planet once more, and Tifa with him. While there, they straighten out his memories. He remembers now that he actually defeated Sephiroth, almost killed him after his town was massacred. He also saved Tifa. He hadn't failed at all. He had actually dissociated from his own identity and taken on the identity of his friend Zack, who was accepted into the elite soldier program of Shinra, which Cloud had failed to accomplish. This resolves the confusion about Cloud thinking he was Eris' first love from long ago, because it was actually Zack. Zack and Cloud were later experimented on by the evil scientist Hojo, who brought back Genova, and Zack died protecting Cloud on their way to Midgar, which is when Cloud decided to become a mercenary for hire and join Avalanche. The group also learns that Eris was successful in summoning Holy, the antithesis of Meteor, but it is being blocked by Sephiroth and Genova. The group must destroy them both. The group sets out to destroy the weapons and winds up facing off against mad scientist Hojo, who is Sephiroth's father in some manner, who channels an enormous amount of lifestream energy into Sephiroth to help him against the heroes. The group kills Hojo, but Sephiroth and Genova are more powerful than ever. The group returns to the northern crater, descending into the core of the planet, and fight Genova and Sephiroth, destroying them in multiple incarnations until Cloud and Sephiroth are isolated into the lifestream and fight a duel to the final death. Cloud defeats Sephiroth for the last time and is saved from dying in the core's collapse by the hand of what he thinks is Eris, but then realizes is Tifa. An epiphany dawns on him, and he sees how all their lives and that of the planet are intertwined, and how the souls of loved ones continue onward. The group escapes the cave in time to witness Holy emerging from the planet to stop Meteor. It needs help, though, and the life force of all the beings on the planet come to its aid, finally saving the world. This is also part of Cloud's epiphany. 500 years later, we see the planet has healed and the forces of evil vanquished.
This is from helpingwritersbecomeauthors.com. It is literally just a listing of the story beats of the game. Anyway, that's all of Final Fantasy VII and its key characters. All that said...
I didn't know that about Final Fantasy VII at all. I really didn't know the plot of it. Besides, like, vague eco-terrorism. So, to start you off...
Tees, can you explain in, like, a brief sentence what Final Fantasy House or Final Fantasy VII House refers to?
Yes. Final Fantasy VII House was a group of people living together in an apartment, and then later on, and briefly, in a house, where the ringleader, so to say, a woman by the name of Jennifer Cornette, better known as Jen or Genova, firmly believed that she was Genova in a past life. Of Final Fantasy VII, her partner Renee was Hojo, and that all of their friends were Final Fantasy VII characters. And the list of the events that we're about to tell you is about what happened to specifically the person who was dubbed their Zack, and there's also notes from someone that was claimed to be their Vincent Valentine, that's his name, not Vincent and Valentine, but Vincent Valentine, as well as their Eris, and even if we have some time, we might talk about some other people who are also involved. But for the main part, this is specifically about Jen and Hojo and Zach and what Jen did to manipulate Zach, as well as Hojo's doing, and just how you should just watch out for Jen. So it was basically a living situation that was fucking awful, to put it shortly.
I think I do just want to put as a disclaimer, because you mentioned look out for Jen on the internet. Jen is still active on the internet, though we don't know in what capacity and under what names, because Jen is incredibly secretive about her identity and will present herself as being fictional characters to exhausting degrees. And it is very hard to find and identify Jen, because she does not post pictures of herself. She is very secretive about people hearing her voice. Even she, if you were to encounter Jen, it would most likely, she's obviously not going to refer to herself as Jen, and she will fight you tooth and nail if you ever did try to call her out on it. She will refer to herself first as a character and last as a character. So just be aware and be conscious when you are on the internet.
Mm-hmm. And if you're listening to this, you may find yourself asking, well, isn't just like this kinning gone crazy? And I mean, it is, in a way. For people who don't know what kinning is, it's when you believe that you are a character to some degree. However, in the case of Final Fantasy VII House and Jennifer, she calls it soul bonding. And
yeah, so other kinning comes from other kin, and kinning and soul bonding are kind of linked. Soul bonding was sort of the early terminology that was used on the internet, to my understanding. And normally we saw it first not with fictional characters, but with people who believed that they had the soul of an animal inside of a human body and they were trapped. I think I do just want to be careful in how we talk about kinning and soul bonding, because it is... Listen, neither of us are mental health professionals.
No.
And unless you are a mental health professional and you are someone in specifics mental health professional, it is not your place or job to call a person's behaviors healthy, unhealthy, mentally stable, mentally unstable, etc. I think a behavior like this, in my personal opinion, has the potential to be very dangerous, and in terms of just protecting oneself, not necessarily towards other individuals. But Jennifer Cornette used soul bonding and kinning as a mechanic in her cult recruitment. So if you see a person on Twitter who is talking about how they kin a JoJo character, just leave them alone. Just leave them alone.
If they're not hurting anybody, then what's it matter, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's probably not your business, you know?
Yeah,
exactly.
Let them kin date and ruin their friendships or whatever they want.
And kinning sort of has become a little bit more colloquialized and less extreme as a term over time, as people have joked about it and appropriated it, where now for a lot of people it has become just like, oh, I relate to this character, or I really love this character.
And I mean, I do it too. I will look at
I reaction Ken Garfield
image.
I'll say it.
I look at reaction images, go, oh, Ken, all the time. And I mean, even in a span of what, 5 years ago, that was like heavily even frowned upon to even joke about saying that you kin something. And like all things, a lot of people considered kin to be really cringe for a very long time. And because of that, so many of these people just went along with it, not to make Jen upset, because she would use this as a tactic. And when people didn't play along or didn't give her what she wanted, she would throw a tantrum. And people were like, okay, you need to stop this tantrum, so I'll just give you what you want, which is the opposite thing that you're supposed to do.
And when you say tantrum, it was either like screaming abusive fits or literal child tantrum, or locking herself in the bathroom and threatening to hurt herself.
She would cry. She would put on a baby voice for people. She would make like pleading remarks via AIM and stuff like that. She just was a manipulator at the end of the day, plain and simple, you know? So without further ado, so because the person who hosted the original call-out post for Jen was the webmaster slash Zach. This is mostly going to cover Zach's experience. And as we started off saying, the original website, I believe, came out in 2006. But even in the opening post, it does say that this happened several years ago. Final Fantasy VII came out in 1997. And the original Live Journal entries were from 2002. So if this happened several years ago and it was 2002, I'm going to assume this is around like 1999, turn of the
late
century.
Late 90s, very early aughts, yeah. turn of the century.
Yeah, because there's mention of people doing like art commissions and stuff like that, but never tablets or someone's pen getting thrown out or hidden or something like that. There's mention of using your computers and talking on AIM and Furtopia and stuff like that, but there's no DeviantArt mentioned, there's no FurAffinity mentioned, and all of that. So I think it's that weird time period that everything's moving really fast at once and nobody knows how to behave on the internet. So to set down the ground rules, also I'm gonna just use Zach, Hojo, and Jen just to make life easier for people, including myself. So Zach owned a very popular Zach Cloud fan site, and it was the only site at the time for that ship. So people really flocked to the site for all Zach and Cloud related pieces. And God bless their heart, because Zach actually had their AIM listed, their personal AIM account listed on the site so people could contact him. Also important to mention, I feel like, that Zach is in fact trans. This person who was writing this up at the time, he was kind of beginning to question his gender. There's also this other manipulative layer that's not really frequently talked about, I feel like, mm-hmm. because already so often do people who struggle with gender and sexuality just have to deal with a lot and the fear of coming out and stuff like that. And then to have,
especially if we're talking about somebody at the late 90s, early aughts, when there's very little knowledge or support in America, and cult leaders tend to go after individuals who are vulnerable.
Exactly. So he got a message that was basically saying, like, hey, I want to share and promote each other's sites. And it ended up being for the domain hojo.org. Hojo.org no longer exists under Renee's handle, so you can't really just tacka onto hojo.org and see a bunch of Final Fantasy VII bullshit. Zach has never been there before, however, he realized how huge this site was in comparison to his own, and he realized that this person was obsessed with Hojo. And they're like, yeah, sure, we can exchange links, of course. Like, I'd love to share it, which I think is a really prominent thing about the internet at an early time. People were kind of, there was like this fear of a stalker on the internet, but then it was also like, hey, you like the same thing that I like. We're going to be friends now, especially when you didn't have friends that had the same interests as you in person, mm-hmm. I feel like. I mean, I was, what, 5 in 1999, so maybe I'm just talking out of my ass here, but that's at least my own personal experience. So they link shared with each other, and then the kind of started a sort of friendship, but not a real one. And Hojo kind of started to call the webmaster Zach, which makes sense because he runs a site for Zach and Zach is his favorite, blah, blah, blah. Really didn't think that much of it, but like, it's not like they had anything in common with each other. Hojo just kind of would talk once in a while, and it was pretty much usual, like what you do with your Twitter mutuals now that you're not really good friends with. Like, sometimes you reply to each other back and forth, sometimes you like each other's posts, so on and so forth. Just, it's like, hey, what's up, how's life, just on AIM, you know, nothing serious. Until Zach posts a piece of fan art that has a short story attached as the description, and Hojo shows up via IM and sends the message, this was really realistic, is that a memory? And Zach goes, what? Which makes sense, you know. And Hojo just dumbly asks, is that one of your memories? And obviously, Zach is dumbfounded. Like, what the fuck does that mean? I would ask the same question.
Is it English isn't your first language, and mm-hmm. you're not quite sure how to phrase this question, or are you sincerely asking me if the fan fiction I wrote is a memory that I have of an experience as the character?
Yeah. And Zach obviously says no. He made it up on the spot, and Hojo was just like, oh, I guess, and was super disappointed about it. And later on, whatever time period it was, Hojo says that her wife, Jen, wants to speak to Zach. And this is when it begins. Jen begins to talk about magic to Zach, and Zach is kind of like, oh, what the fuck? I grew out of that in early high school. To quote specifically Zach's live journal posts, he writes,
then came a good old bombshell. I was asked if I had any memories of past lives. I do believe in past lives. I think it's a pretty valid cycle, given how many cultures believe in it. So I told her, no, I didn't. But I did believe in it. I should never, ever have said that. It was like inviting the vampire into my house. Jen's attack was swift and sure. She tells me that she thinks in a past life I was Zach from FF7. Think about it, she said. You're both country grown. You both have the instinct of dragging off friends who could be left behind. You take a bullet for someone, right? You say you don't believe in magic or any of that. And he wanted to be a mercenary. For all of his 5 or 6 lines, you have a pretty similar speech pattern. You even live in a basement, like one he was locked in, and you hate it.
This is... when people talk to me like this, I want to jump out of my skin, so I can't even imagine how talked down he must have felt at this time. Yeah. And just how... like, who is this random girl on AIM? Just
when people, I think even when people who know you relatively well start listing your traits to you, it feels uncomfortable.
Yeah, I'm going to become a wild animal. I'm going to maul you. And Zach was just kind of like, I'm not Zach, but like, yeah, sure, I guess that's possible. And Jen is like, but you are our Zach. You are my Zach. And she starts listing off all these people that she believed that were soul bonded and part of their universe and stuff like that. And that's even a common thing in kinning today. I mean, I don't personally kin, but I have friends who do. And sometimes friends will be like, oh, I think you're XYZ, this person, a part of my kin universe. I'm like, you know what? Sure. Have fun. I'll be your...
Peace, you're my Hamburglar. I'm Grimace.
I love that. And... I think we should get matching Hamburglar and Grimace tattoos. Actually, you know what we should get tattoos of? The little nugget toys that were at McDonald's that have the faces. Which ones I'm talking about?
I would need to look at those, but I can commit to a Grimace tattoo.
I think that would be really great. You should put them next to Alexander the Great.
Absolutely not.
The two greatest
it'll
men.
Go on my shitpost sock. That was the worst. That was the worst thing I ever did. I was like, I'm going to have an area of my body where I'm just going to get stupid tattoos of whatever the fuck I want. Which means now that anytime someone's like, you should get a tattoo of the Outback Steakhouse logo, I'm like, fuck yeah. Why not?
And you just put it on your shitpost sock. Oh, Caspian, I love you so much.
If you're coming over from the Final Fantasy XV fandom and you're familiar with Legnus, I do have him tattooed on my body. I'm that person.
I love that. I love that so much. So after that...
I want to jump in really quick. I'm sorry to interrupt you again.
Of course.
I think there is something particularly evil and insidious about Jen's tactic to convince Zach that not only is he Zach, the character from Final Fantasy, but then to also kind of establish, like, there are other people around us and in our little family pod that are also soul bonded to these characters from this game you really love, because there is then this inherent sort of invitation and, like, implication of FOMO, like, we have found each other and you're the one who's excluded now unless you choose to join us, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so to go back to that vulnerability, around Christmas time, Zach actually ended up having a fight with his mother, And Jen and Hojo were like, come stay during winter break, come hang out for a few days, blah, blah, blah. And he went. He took a $300 bus ride to visit Jen and Hojo in Pennsylvania from Alabama. And he went there and they convinced him to stay 2 days longer than he was planning. And that becomes a really big habit of Jen and Hojo, forcing people to come stay longer than they ever intended to. And during this time, when he was visiting for all of maybe 2 weeks, he mentions that Jen was taking advantage of him, trying to make him make out with a girl that she claimed was their heiress, and was refusing to cook towards Zach's dietary restrictions, and yet taking Zach's money so they could buy steak, because Jen was obsessed with steak. She refused to have anything else. She wanted steak for dinner every night and Gatorade, especially blue Gatorade. And
oh.
I know, I don't want to, sir, you're dining of steak and Gatorade. I would vomit.
It's something about those two together.
That sounds like a fancy dinner that a 7-year-old would concoct. Like, big game today. I gotta get my Gatorade, and then I'm gonna have my T-bone steak.
Like, I'm remembering a person in my life who would, like, have a hot bowl of ramen and then a glass of milk with ice cubes in it, and I'm just like,
yuck. Oh my god. I hate milk. Like, I do not like milk at all. That sounds disgusting. To quote Zach once again, he says,
"Around spring, we were still fairly good friends despite the things that Jen did that disturbed me. At one point, her and Hojo had locked me into a soundproof glass chamber in the basement of a school building because they wanted to see me remember being Zach. I panicked, but not because I fucking thought I was in a video game mansion. After banging on the door and jerking the handle and freaking out, I was finally let out and was shaking. I was not pleased with them for the rest of the day."
What the fuck? Like, wouldn't that be the red flag for so many people? And that's when you know.
I think it would be, but it's already an irrational... To try and go into any of these situations with any amount of rationality isn't going to work, because it's an irrational situation with people who are already thinking irrationally. And I, you know, there are certain things that we can do now to develop support systems for ourselves outside of our communities. But even still, it doesn't quite fill that same void of, like, not having physical people you know be around you to be supportive. And, like, I think there are a lot of people, and I mean, again, this is why cults target vulnerable individuals and work to isolate people, because if these are the only people you have, you're less likely to leave them.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I think this is the moment when I was reading that I realized that they were indoctrinated into a cult, and he didn't even realize. The issue is that when something traumatic like this happens to you, and you still are friends with that person, that's when you know, like, that they're holding you captive in a way.
Well, you know? That you don't even realize that what was just done to you was a traumatic incident.
Yeah, true. That is very true.
Trauma can tunnel vision you in a very specific and threatening kind of way that you are unaware of unless you are outside of the situation.
Thank you.
And even years later, it may not make sense to you, because trauma is so complex and we still don't understand the full impacts of it.
Mm-hmm. And this happened more than once. I mean, this was probably the most traumatic one of them all, but later on, Zach went to visit Jen and Hojo again, this time with a friend who was forced to be their Vincent Valentine. And Zach recalls it as, "Jen immediately wanted us to try past life regression with us."
Did they try and put this person into a coffin?
No.
Oh, thank God.
No. Here. Yes, video game past life. We were taking into their bedroom, which smelled like poon. Which, by the way, guys, apparently Jen and Hojo were fighting each other and physically abusing each other, and then immediately having sex with each other, and just a frequent and constant cycle. Like, it never stopped. And this apartment only had one bedroom, so if you were in the living room, you heard all of it the whole entire time, which sounds like an absolute nightmare. Like, I didn't even want to hear my roommates having sex in college. Like,
part of me wonders, like, was it that they, this is not in an attempt to discount abuse that was very likely happening, but was it an abusive situation, or was it a, like, shitty mockery of a BDSM scene?
I think, I mean, we don't know the answer to that. I think it was abuse, because it got violent. Like, there's some accounts here that people have blacked out from getting hit. There's some people, Jen was just violent, and later another one of Jen's partners, Angel, was also violent. And even there's some accounts of Hojo being slightly violent, but not as violent as Jen was.
Well, and the interesting thing too is that Jen's partner here, Renee, i.e. Hojo, is a woman, but in a later fandom, Jen was actively working to convince a person that they were trans, because she would regularly engage in relationships with women, force them to identify as trans so that she could continue to claim she was straight, which is not, like, I'm not saying that if you are a woman having a relationship with a trans man, you're not straight, but that she was actively working to convince and undermine these people's beliefs and standing in their own gender so that she could fulfill for herself her own perception is really fucked up and makes me worry again increasingly about the fact that Zach is a transgender individual in this situation.
Yes, agreed. We're taken into their bedroom and made to lie on the floor. Jen put on a loop, an MP3 of "The Nightmare Is Just Beginning," which I now realize is hilariously appropriate. It's the song that plays when you unlock Vincent's character in FF7. So Jen was forcing, once again, another person into this situation, and thank God this person was a little bit more unaccepting of this, and kind of the two of them just were giggling the whole entire time, and Jen got really pissed about it. Like, Jen was like, "Why aren't you taking this seriously?" And they're like, "Dude, why do you care so much about this?" Like, to this person, it was just a game. To Zach, it was still just a game, despite being indoctrinated and not even realizing it. And Jen would just constantly lie to people and companies to get free shit and discounts and stuff like that. And she tried to then also incorporate this into her awakening situations that we just talked about. And she would even go as far to say that she was a medical student and that she needed to buy syringes. And all these medical companies are like, "What are you talking about? No, you're not." But she would go, for instance, to, like, spirituality and religious bookstores and said that she spoke to angels, and she would get frequently free Christianity books, some media ethos, and other random stuff from the internet, and just kind of, like, make up her own pseudo religion, which is something that cult leaders also do as well. So she's hitting all of these marks right now, and the farther this goes on, the more you realize that this is just textbook definition of somebody who does in fact run a cult, despite it being about a video game. So the summer is now creeping forward, so this is, like, ongoing. Think about this, I'm gonna assume they maybe knew each other maybe a summer, let's say, and then Christmas hits and they go visit, and then they go to Jen and Hojo's again with their friend who's supposed to be Vincent to go see a concert, and now summer is starting to come. And in Zach's mind, he feels like it's a good idea to move into Jen and Hojo's apartment because he wouldn't have to go back all the way to Brooklyn to live with his mom. And then he could still just go back to Alabama to go to class. So it wouldn't be as far as a trip from Pennsylvania back to Alabama, as opposed to it would be from Brooklyn to Alabama. I don't really necessarily believe that, but
Pennsylvania is a really big state.
Yeah.
I believe this was College Town, Pennsylvania.
State College, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if that is on the east or west side of Pennsylvania, but I mean, it's a long state.
At the time, it made sense to him. So he was like, all right, well, I'll get a summer job. If this works out, then I'll have a little bit of money. I'll live on my own. I won't have to deal with my mom, which he was still butting heads with at the time. And he got a job at a grocery store and things were good for about a week. Once again, to quote Zach,
I can't even say what came first, chicken or egg. But let's just say that after 1 week, I was getting sick of it. I was the workhorse. I guess because I was Zach, I was therefore the manly man, as opposed to Jen, the Cetra queen, or Hodro, the frail scientist. Jen quit her babysitting job and refused to look for another one. I was the one who had to carry groceries to and from the house, the one who made the money to feed everyone, the one who had to fix or move furniture when it needed to be fixed or moved. My computer could rarely get online because Jen was on almost 24/7, and the rest of the time she would watch me as I typed, so I could never make a journal entry that read something along the lines of, Jen is abusing me, help me, God, I'm tired and I want out of here.
And this makes me so angry because this is essentially just a hostage situation in a digital age. I mean, you're trapped and you can't do anything about it because this girl is watching your every step. I mean, this is a grown-ass man. He's like 19, almost 20 here. Jen is maybe 20, 21, and Renee's slash Hojo is also in the same age bracket as Jen is. Jen would frequently micromanage Zach's space and would write down Messenger usernames and then message those people later. And there was a really big issue of Zach just... He didn't have a key to the apartment either, and he would get locked out because Jen would just go to sleep randomly and wouldn't open the door when he knocked on the door, and he was losing sleep because Jen and Hojo were constantly fighting and hitting each other and then having loud makeup sex, and he was still living in the living room because it was a one-bedroom apartment, and he was losing sleep also because Jen would frequently wake Zach up at 3 a.m. to fight magical disturbances or to see a fairy ring. And because of his lack of energy, he was actually losing hours at work in a combination of just both not being super responsive, but because summer hours are starting to get cut.
Sleep deprivation is like one of the number one and sort of easiest tactics used by cult leaders as well to keep people in a state of disorientation so that they don't question what is going on, so that they, you know, don't have the energy to leave. I mean, when you haven't slept properly for even just like one day, the amount that affects your performance is it's startling and stunning, you know?
Yeah.
And so if you are consistently failing to get sleep night after night after night, if your living situation is unstable, I mean, people turn around and they're like, well, how could you let this happen to you? And it's like, well, again, it is not by any means a rational situation. You can't approach it with rationality.
Mm-hmm. Even 15 years later, Jen was doing this this tactic in the Hannibal fandom.
Yep.
And was forcing people to stay up until wee hours of the night, was randomly calling them on Skype and stuff like that. It was a mess.
And if you didn't answer the call, I mean, you would have it out. She would tear you apart.
She would call your home phone and mm-hmm. try and find you and stuff like that. It was constantly. You were under surveillance 24/7, whether you liked it or not.
She's not stupid. she knows exactly what she's doing.
She knows what she's doing, which is the most dangerous. She has this whole front about her, and she acts innocent, but it's really obvious what she's doing at the end of the day. And obviously, like all cult situations, some people do in fact wake up mid experience. And to quote Zach, he writes,
I think Eris woke up to what Jen was doing and wanted out. Jen was on about how she had been betrayed and how they were so united about this time. I began to read a few horror stories. Jen had made Eris sit in a bathtub full of ice cubes and green food coloring as part of her Cetra training. Eris also at the time called and demanded her stuff back at the apartment, and Jen blew up and said that she was going to kill herself.
Which, obviously, a big no-no. We don't threaten to kill ourselves when people don't get their way. But Jen had been screaming that she was going to slit her wrists, and she was sitting in the middle of the floor and crying, and there was truly one of the unsung heroes of this whole entire event was the person that they claimed to be their Cid. He would kind of come in and out of the apartment and would visit and stuff like that. And he was actually there when Jen decided that she was going to kill herself. So he was trying to console her and was draping damp cloths on her wrist. And when this happened, Zach and Hojo were out at a bookstore actually stealing books because they didn't have enough money for anything. So they got a call. They raced to a cab that they didn't have money for to come home because this could have actually been a potential emergency. And Zach saw Jen's wrists and it was a light cut at best. He had experience with self-harm, so he recognized what a deeper cut looked like, and he was like, this is bullshit. Jen just scratched herself with maybe, like, a safety pin or a butter knife, and it was no way in hell a suicide scent, but more just a manipulation tactic. And he was kind of like, this seems kind of bullshit right here. And he had a pause for a moment. But it clearly didn't work that well because he proceeded to join in bashing this person, Eris. And when she came to pick up her stuff, she obviously still wanted to be friends with Zach, but he gave her the cold shoulder all along and they never fully reconciled. But after a few, that was the beginning of the end for him, I feel like.
There is a disclaimer at the top that this letter was taken from the Wayback Machine and it was posted without consent of the original author, i.e. Eris.
Genova, when I became your apprentice, you told me to shut up and not argue with you. Apparently, a sorceress is supposed to be a creature who blindly accepts the opinions of the authorities, even when she firmly believes they are wrong. From this, I learned that when Jen says something I disagree with, I need to nod and make agreeing sounds anyway. Otherwise, we would have to fight every 2 minutes, and quite frankly, saying what I thought wasn't worth the hassle. I am not, however, your apprentice anymore, and I am free to say what I think. And I will, because it's a relief to say it, even if you aren't reading this. I do not actually give a crap whether you read it or not. It will hurt your feelings, and you will care that it happened, and I don't. You have been warned. This, be it right or wrong, is what I think. You do not look like any Final Fantasy characters. You look like Jennifer Cornette, end of story. I, for that matter, look nothing like Yuna. Yuna looks Asian. You have no money because you keep spending it on things you want. Anything you want is not automatically a magical item. There may be potential magic in everything, but then there's magic in things that you don't bother to look at, things you can have for free. If something is a magical item, that doesn't mean you must own it. It would be nice if you could, but you can't always do so. I had money because I rarely bought anything for myself. Whenever I got money, I would save it. I am not a money generator, and neither are my parents. If you want to have money, you need to not spend it. I now do not have money because I spent it on you. Proof, all gone. You still wanted more, but I didn't have any more to give you. Nobody has everything they want. Not you, not Renee, not Zach, not Tickles, not Karina, not Britney Spears, not your parents, not Waka, not W, not even me. This is called life. It is a bitch. When a person, any person, gets something he wants, he immediately starts wanting something else. This is called being human. It, too, is a bitch. Soul bonds may be important. However, if you treat them like they are more important than what happens in the real world, then your real life will probably suffer. Your soul bond life, however, will be wonderful. If these results are unsatisfactory to you, then give your real life priority. You, not your soul bonds, are responsible for what you do. You are responsible for what your body does. If you cannot live with what your soul bonds do, don't let them out. If you cannot keep them from getting out, you may want to get help. Otherwise, you will be blamed for what your soul bonds do. End of story. You are responsible for what you do even when you are puppeted. That is how it is. Do not expect puppeting to excuse your behavior. If you cannot live with this, choose a lifestyle that does not involve your being puppeted. Having an excuse for something does not make it a good idea. If you keep talking about how good you are at everything, people will say they agree, regardless of their real opinions, because it is impolite not to. They will, however, eventually get sick of having to agree and start to dislike you. If you keep talking about how bad you are at everything, people will say they disagree in order to cheer you up. They will get sick of this too. Whether or not people say you are good at something does not change how good at it you actually are. If Renee does not go to class and do her homework, it will be difficult for her to pass those classes. Then she is no closer to graduating. Until she graduates, it will be hard for her to get a job that makes more money than she gets now. This is called capitalism, and it's a bitch. No one likes it, but no one has come up with anything that works any better. Renee always has to call off of work or skip class to give you attention. She does this because she loves you. Love makes people do irrational and reckless things. This is one of them. That does not make it a good idea. You are wrecking Renee's life. It is wrong to do so, even if you have her permission. Everyone needs attention. Everyone also needs to shut up sometimes and let people pay attention to something else. You stole my crystals and doujinshi. They do not belong to you, and you took them and refused to give them back. They are not yours. I have been using crystals since I was 10 years old. You are wrong when you start with that "you don't use them properly" shit, because I've been using crystals since elementary school. You taught me no magic. The only thing I actually learned from you was to beware of people like you. The doctors probably cannot figure out what is wrong with you because you are not sick. If you feel like you are fat, eat less. Do not whine about it. No one else cares whether or not you are fat. It is ridiculous to expect others to never talk about grocery bills because of the chance that you might be able to reinterpret it as a criticism of your eating habits. Most people do not spend as much on food as you do. Since you can barely pay your other bills, this is not a good idea. Healthy friendships do not require fighting. Healthy relationships with parents or lovers possibly do, because you are required to agree in order to decide what to do, and this creates conflict. Friends do not have to agree all the time, so they do not have to fight. I do not fight with the vast majority of my friends. These friendships are nevertheless healthy. You fight with everyone. A good number of these relationships are not healthy. If you don't want to have fights, stop picking them. If you don't want everyone to treat you like the bad guy, don't act like one. Taking orders from Ultimicia might not be the best idea. People only feel sorry for you so many times. If your life is bad, change it so it isn't bad anymore. Having bad things in your past does not excuse behavior in the present. Life lessons are not the same things as magic lessons, but you mix them up. I never signed up to take life lessons from you. You are not very good at life. This is your own problem, but you should try not to teach other people how to live, because you yourself do not know. You were not my best friend, no matter how many times you said you were, and no matter how many times I had to agree with you so as not to upset you. You were a good friend, and you were important to me, but you were not my best friend. Someone else is. If you had not been important to me, I would not have even bothered to agree with you. If Renee were not so important to me, you might not have been either. Proclaiming yourself a bitch does not excuse being one. If you are going to be bitchy, expect others to be bitchy back. I never claimed being the sweet and innocent one. You are the one who called me that. In fact, I specifically said I do not think of myself as being that way. Do not be so shocked when I do not act that way. I am not being puppeted. I am being pissed off. Nobody is an archetype in real life. You are the one who betrays your friends, not vice versa. Most of our mutual acquaintances do not trust you. At least, that is what they have told me. Nobody is going to trust you if you keep crying wolf. You lie a lot, and rarely even stick to one consistent story. A lot of people notice that you are a liar, even if they do not say so to your face. I do not want to go to Penn State anyway. Had I decided to go there for grad school, it would have been specifically for the companionship of people who live there. I actually go to a better school, and I would prefer to keep going to better schools. Telling someone that they want to do something does not make them actually want to do it. It just makes them think that you are wrong. You are more childish than any other adult I know. You act like you're about 12, except when you're acting like you're 2. You do not know anything about anyone else's soul bonds, except maybe their name, hairstyle, and a rough sketch of their past. You look silly when you pretend that you do know about others' soul bonds. Most of the time, you guess things, and you guess wrong. You have a sexual relationship with a girl. The term lesbian applies to your relationship. It is unreasonable of you to get upset if someone calls you one. You are one. You are the only one acting like there is something wrong with it. Lesbian is not a criticism. It is a fact. No one has criticized you. Not everything that is said about you is criticism or praise. Some of it is just fact. You take everything personally, regardless of whether or not people are trying to criticize or praise you. Because of this, you feel hurt whenever anybody says anything. If you want to stop feeling hurt, stop taking things personally. Not everything people says is designed to make Jen feel good or bad. In fact, very little of what is said is designed to make Jen feel good or bad. Most people avoid making personal statements most of the time. This does not apply when people are angry. Many people are angry at you. Most of it is your fault. I realize that you will take all of this personally, should you ever read it. You will feel bad. Anyone would. I am not that stupid. If you didn't want that to happen, you shouldn't be reading a list of things I thought about Jen but never told her. Feeling bad is a fairly obvious consequence of doing that. If you are hurt, it is your fault. Most of the time, when you get hurt, it is your fault. This is true of most adults in most situations. That's just how it is.
It's scathing.
Oh, that is, yeah.
That is deep anger. Like, and obviously some of this really doesn't hold up that well.
Mm-hmm. Just and is riddled with its own enabling bullshit.
Yeah, but oofa doofa, you can tell, like, that clearly outlines just all the shit that Jen does and just what an awful person she is to other people around her that she believes are her minions or her soul bonding family or whatever the hell you want to call her. And Jen would continue to throw hissy fits after this happened, and they would get worse and worse.
But well, there's something interesting too in that. So, yes. Like, the two names are mentioned from different Final Fantasy games, which indicates that, like, Aeris has been with this through at least some span of time. You know, like, mm-hmm. Zack is only getting, like, the Final Fantasy VII based bullshit, but then Aeris is clearly dealing with it for the release of, like, multiple games. Oh, just...
Oh, poor girl. Rough shit. But there's also something else that's been going on in this apartment that we haven't even talked about. There is an issue of garbage piling up.
Oh, yeah. The hoarding.
So there's a really bad hoarding issue that Jen and Hojo have. And Jen was also not practicing personal hygiene.
Right. Jen is described in across the span of multiple years as, like, only ever wearing a purple skirt that she would pull up over her breasts to wear as, like, a full-length dress, but was, like, never washing it and, like, wearing it day to day to day.
She wouldn't shower. She wouldn't brush her teeth. The most that she would do was spray, like, a body mist on her and put on, like, essential oils maybe, and then glitter. Apparently this apartment was covered in glitter. And people, in one account, somebody mentioned that, like, even a month later, they found glitter in, like, their private parts. Like, it was everywhere. Oh my God. And so eventually,
I mean, you know, just to, I mean, you use a little bit of glitter, that'll still happen.
Yeah, true. Very true. Glitter gets everywhere, baby. I mean, I one time did a cosplay that had rhinestones on it, and I was finding rhinestones everywhere. Literally, I think this, maybe 2018 I did this. I literally found a rhinestone 2 months ago, 2 years later. Like, and I was like, oh no, it's the rhinestone.
Your craft's haunting you.
It really is. So after all of this, and the smell started to get worse and worse, instead of deep cleaning their apartment like what any sane person would do, Jen and Hojo's answer was to change their apartment to a studio apartment. So, because they were convinced that the apartment itself smelled and something was wrong with the apartment, instead of them just never cleaning it.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't clean it, that's going to get into your drywall.
Yeah, and Zack at the time was like, okay, I wash the dishes, I get the groceries, I make dinner. And apparently Jen also would decide what to want for dinner at like 10 p.m. and then they wouldn't cook dinner until like 1. They were eating dinner at like 3 a.m., which also, once again, goes into the sleep deprivation thing. Mm-hmm. And now mealtimes has become, once again, another hostage situation.
Mm-hmm.
And Zack was like, okay, I admit it. Like, I wasn't taking out the trash either, but I was doing everything else in this apartment.
And is severely exhausted and is a yeah. victim of some very severe and subtle abuse.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so when Jen and Hojo got the bright idea that they were going to move into a studio apartment, Zack was like, what am I going to do? Like, I'm going to be even more closely watched. I'm not going to be able to do anything without Jen breathing down my neck. And he was beginning to feel so fucking trapped. And then when the moving day actually happened, he did all of the work to move them into that apartment. Jen did nothing. She was having some like pouty phase where she was laying in bed and Renee was doing something else. And the three of them went house shopping and they got into a huge fight at Kmart. And it just
sounds normal.
Was yeah, and just
sounds
one
totally
of the
healthy.
Yeah, and it kind of was like another notch on the belt, getting closer and closer to him finally snapping in a way. And he just, things were adding up, and maybe about a week into them all moving into the studio apartment, there was a severe rainstorm to the point where the electricity at work went out. And it wasn't bad enough that Zach was hitting only 1 hour a week at this point, because if that's how severely his hours were cut, he had to walk back to the apartment completely drenched because he didn't have a car. And he left his shoes outside of the apartment to let them dry off. And the next morning, his shoes weren't there. And he said, "Fuck this." And he just walked out and never went back. Sid, who I briefly mentioned before, helped him get in contact with his dad. His dad helped him take a plane ticket. He grabbed his stuff a few days later. He got his pet rat. Zach was homeless for a few days, and he even was like, "This is better than this, being homeless without shoes, and this is better than anything else I ever dealt." He had $5 left in his wallet at the end of this, and he just never looked back. And even now, there's still mutterings of Zach online. He did an interview with Vice, and he talks a lot about how the shoes were the straw that broke the camel's back. I mean, he was the one who put together this site, and the Demon Sushi site is technically archived. I don't think he owns the rights to it anymore, but he's still pretty open about it. And there's tons of other people who found the site and then backed it up. And Jen was doing this to a bunch of people. Tons of people were living with Jen and Hojo and taking their money and making them sleep deprived and forcing them to soul bond. There's like 3 different Zachs that gave accounts. So Jen clearly was trying to find people to shove them into this soul bond family, and just kind of was like, "Oh, well, we don't have this character anymore. I guess this person has to be this character." And she really just kept this con going on for 20 years in between different fandoms. I mean, since this is mostly about Final Fantasy House, there was the Sarah Saga, which is about her partaking in Suikoden characters in California. She would try to have like cult rituals in the living room of this giant shared house in California that had about 8 people living in it between like 3 or 4 floors. And people were like, "What the fuck are you doing?" And people even mentioned something briefly about her being in England at some point. She obviously with people who are this secretive, you don't really know exactly what their origins are, like so many other cult leaders. And it's pretty obvious that Jen actually, in the Vice article, they talk about Jen being a student of Cross Creek Residential Treatment Center in Laverkan, Utah, which was a reform school that actually has a lot of accounts and lawsuits about alleged brutal, widespread physical and psychological abuse of teenagers in the program. And there are a ton of people who went to the school that backed it up. People who said that they knew Jen when she was at Cross Creek. So this is all information from the Vice article. So some people are like, have reached out to Zach and been like, "Oh, I knew Jen in high school, I guess you could call it." But frequently people didn't get back to him. So it's kind of like adds almost to her mythos in a way. And just because you were abused, it doesn't excuse how you treat other people.
Absolutely.
I mean, we say this
not.
Over and over and over again, but the point still stands that Jen knew that she was taking advantage and abusing people and was evil. At the end of the day, she was fucking evil. And she did this up until the Hannibal fandom, for God's sake. She pretended to be like an official player of NBC
and
for
like
Hannibal.
Was in correspondence with Brian Fuller, had correspondence with a lot of individuals who were part of that production team.
She was bribing people. She was rigging giveaways. She even groomed somebody and sexually assaulted them. And this poor person was the one that Cass briefly mentioned about how Jen forced them to be transgender. And this person, the last time that they were seen by their mother was 2016. And there's been nothing heard of this person in the past 4 years. For all we know, Jen could have killed them. Like, I'm not saying Jen did, but like, there hasn't been any report of this person since mm-hmm. Jen ran away with them after brutally grooming them. I just, oh my God.
It's terrifying and it's infuriating.
The more I think about it, the more upset I become, because like, this is a child. These are people who clearly needed help. And mm-hmm. Zach also talks about he had a drinking problem around that time, and he really was using alcohol a lot to cope with stuff that was going on. And just, people are hurting, and she is purposely taking advantage of them in a way that they will continue to hurt, and they will then come to her to avoid being hurt. And yeah. That's awful. How could you do that? Like, oh my
I mean it's a bit of a joke, right? It sounds so mm-hmm. ostentatious and over the top and ridiculous that you're like, how could anybody ever fall for this, or how could this be this bad? Mm-hmm. But again, like, to continue to beat a dead horse, like, it's not a rational situation. No. And you can't approach it with rationality, but you do have mm-hmm. to look at it from an aspect of empathy and see that these are people who were seeking community and support mm-hmm. and unfortunately were preyed upon by a very malicious individual who mm-hmm. continues to exist and could be doing this in another fandom, and we're just totally unaware of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Because of course, like, the way people talk about this is like, oh, it's a fucking mm-hmm. joke. Okay, yeah. Well, you've now set the landscape where, like, mm-hmm. somebody feels even more uncomfortable coming forward.
Yeah, and, like, the first time I learned about Final Fantasy House, I was like, bro, what the fuck? Mm-hmm. And, like, I thought it was just, like, this weird and wacky thing. But then the more that I thought about it, and the more that I reflected on it, and the more that I, like, read about it, I realized that this is a cult, the same way that
cults don't have to be massive. They don't have to be big. They don't have mm-hmm. to be centric to, you know, a religious or spiritual experience. Cults can be very mm-hmm. small. Mm-hmm. Cults can be two people. Cults are more pervasive and more present than people realize.
Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, it's just so scary and so traumatizing. And this should be a precautionary tale instead of a funny blip in the history of the internet and mm-hmm. how wacky the internet can be. This is
because these are real people who were harmed.
These are real people who are being harmed and being scammed and going into debt because somebody is manipulating them out of money. I mean,
and
some
using
people
their money to buy steak and Gatorade
and shinies, as she refers to them.
Yes,
as
just like the expensive jewelry items she saw, you know,
mm-hmm. angel statues, crystals, shit like that. You know? And of course, these things all hold meanings to people when they buy them. That's why you buy them. But if you scam $10,000 for tchotchkes, I'm coming for your ass. Like, it's go time. So I think it's just, I don't know what else to say. I'm just so mind boggled. Just tattle crime. Fucking Hannibal fans and boys, like, good gravy.
Yeah, I mean, and that was relatively recent because the Vice
article... That was 2014.
Article, yeah, the Vice article talks about an individual who knew her where she called mm-hmm. them in 2006, and they said she was doing a lot better and that she was trying to make up for all the bad things she had done to people. But she did it again in the mm-hmm. Hannibal fandom more mm-hmm. recently.
Yeah, I mean, the Vice article was posted 2015. So chances are this was going on right under their nose.
Yeah.
As this Vice article was written, you mm-hmm. know?
And as she, as quote unquote Freddie Lowndes, was speaking at, you know, over the phone at San Diego Comic-Con, you know, mm-hmm. to the Hannibal panel.
To Hugh Dancy pretending to be Freddie Lowndes. Is that his name?
No, not to Hugh Dancy. To Will Graham.
To Will fucking Graham.
If you're interested in the Tattlecrime saga, let us know.
Yeah,
we can talk about that one too.
That's a whole other one. And we can also even talk about the Sarasaga and the Suikoden fandom as well. Mm-hmm. I don't really know a lot about that.
We can look into it.
I sure can. So I guess...
Yeah, big thank you to Tease who handled this episode.
I really was just reading and reading and reading for like 2 weeks all of this shit. And I felt like it was a rabbit hole. It just kept going and going and it never stopped. Well... I think it's time we wrap this bad boy up.
Yes. So, if you're interested in reaching out to us, if you have ideas for episodes, if you have questions for us, we had a lovely listener who reached out to us because they were doing some work on their final and they wanted some help and suggestions with that. So even if you have questions like that, like, please feel free to reach out to us. Mm-hmm. You can find us on Twitter at AuthorsNotePod, or you can reach out to us via Gmail. That's AuthorsNotePod@gmail.com. We're a little slower to get back on email, but we will, you know, we'll respond to you. If you're interested in finding more of my work, you can find me on Twitter at @ValHethella. That's VALHETHELLA. Tease, if people want to find more of you, where can they find you on Twitter?
You could find me at Vicuñad, VICUNAD. The person who made our theme music is James Wyulo. You can find him on Bandcamp at James Y.
And the wonderful individual who made our cover art is Nyaliest. You can find more of her on Twitter at Nyaliest, NYALLIEST. If you're interested in supporting us a little more personally, you can find us on Ko-fi at AuthorsNotePod. That would mean so much to us. And until next time, thank you very much and stay safe.
Bye guys, I love you.